Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where performance is driven by original fundamental research on a global scale. This is Putnam Today, produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Today's unemployment report means one of two things. Either the economy is getting better, or we're still stuck. Truth is, maybe too soon to tell. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the Batten Institute, advancing knowledge about entrepreneurship and innovation at the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business. www.batteninstitute.org.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Great to have you here on this Friday, everybody. It is the 5th of February today. So, jobs. By now, you've heard the numbers. There were 20,000 fewer jobs in the American economy at the end of January than there were on New Year's Day. And yet the unemployment rate, that is the percentage of the workforce unable to find work, fell to 9.7%. That discrepancy you can chalk up to the way the data is collected. It's not a huge issue, at least for a single month. But it does leave us at something of an economic crossroads, because while today's report was more promising than not, what does it tell us about where things might be going? Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale went looking for some of those answers.
Employers are hiring temporary workers, an early indication for some that more permanent jobs are on the horizon. And the number of underemployed, people in part-time jobs who want full-time work, is dropping. John Challenger at the outplacement firm Challenger Gray and Christmas says that's positive.
A sign, perhaps, that more people are finding work that fits their needs.
But it could also be a sign that people have been out of work so long they've given up and are no longer in the job market. Jerry O'Driscoll, a former Federal Reserve Board member, now with the Cato Institute, doesn't see any long-term improvement in job creation.
It's not sustainable yet. Maybe it's the beginning of something, but the evidence isn't there.
Others are much more confident the economy will continue to grow and generate more jobs. University of San Francisco business professor John Fisher has studied the history of economic rebounds. In today's report, he sees evidence that long-term unemployment is headed in the right direction.
Relatively, the number is going down. I think that's the important thing. I think it's happening much earlier than consensus estimates anticipated, and I think it's going to go to 8% by the end of this year.
But with no assurances, Washington's politicians are left wondering whether to jump in with more help. Moody's Analytics' Mark Zandi offers some advice.
It would make good sense for policymakers to continue to provide significant support to the economy and add a little bit of juice, a job tax credit, more help to provide credit to small businesses so that they can go out and hire.
He says it's still a very tough job market, but the trend is slowly turning in the right direction. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Today had all the makings of a miserable day in the markets. Not only was there that jobs report here, but for the second day in a row, European and Asian exchanges took giant steps backwards. The euro spent most of the day losing ground to the dollar, and commodity prices were down, too, at least some of them. The proximate cause for all that commotion was, on the face of it, kind of surprising. It was the lack of demand for Portuguese bonds. There's trouble in some of the smaller, weaker economies in Europe, and that could eventually mean trouble for the rest of us. From the European desk in London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
There's a small group of countries in the Eurozone called the PIGS. It's not an insult, it's an acronym. Portugal, Ireland, Greece and Spain. They have two things in common, rather weak economies and governments that are heavily in debt. As they struggle to borrow more, speculation is growing that one or more of these governments will default. Steve Barrow is a currency specialist with Standard Bank.
I think we are going to see something of an economic crisis in these countries, and that could continue to cause a lot of problems, certainly for the euro.
The single currency has fallen 10% against the dollar in recent weeks and could fall further. Fund manager Justin Urquhart-Stewart says that's bad news for America's big exporting companies.
Because obviously a lot of America's trade is over to the EU, and if the euro value is dropping against the dollar, that means their income for those companies exporting to Europe is weakening.
In his State of the Union address, the president called for a doubling of American exports. The rise in the dollar makes that more difficult. But the trouble in the eurozone has wider, more worrying implications. It shows that investors are getting wary about lending to governments. Andrew Hilton of the CSFI think tank.
markets have suddenly decided to focus on sovereign debt, and it really is potentially a very, very serious issue for almost all the Western economies.
He says governments that can't borrow can't boost their economies. Another global downturn could be looming, and this time governments will be less able to pump in the cash. The pigs that won't fly could turn out to be the canaries in the coal mine. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Officials in Dubai have come up with a new definition for the phrase just in the nick o' time. They say a fresh oil field has been discovered right offshore. That will surely come in handy as the sheikdom tries to figure out how to repay those billions of dollars that it owes. Our senior business correspondent Bob Moon points out, though, that some experts found the timing of the announcement more than a little curious.
For starters, Dubai is conspicuously holding off on doing the numbers.
The information has been very sparsely worded. It's been announced as a discovery, which is promising for Dubai, but no numbers, no reserve numbers, no numbers of the possible production.
Samuel Chuzuk is Middle East analyst at IHS Global Insight in London. He says the lack of detail makes it impossible to know how much the fine might relieve Dubai's financial woes. The newfound oil is said to be in an area where production has already been shrinking fast, so Chuzuk figures it won't have much more relative impact than finding some pocket change tucked away in a drawer.
Occasionally you might hit something, you know, which you didn't really think was there, you know, either a sort of extension to the geological reservoir. But the likelihood of a major find, I think, you know, if it really was large, you know, we probably would have heard some numbers.
Dubai is a member of the United Arab Emirates, which is the world's third biggest oil exporter. But nearly all the nation's reserves are held by the federal capital, Abu Dhabi. Dubai's own reserves are just a tiny part of its economy. Christopher Davidson is an expert on Dubai at Britain's Durham University. He suggests it's no coincidence the announcement came during a federal cabinet meeting in Abu Dhabi.
Of course, the rule of Dubai needs to assure creditors, including Abu Dhabi, that Dubai does have some money on the way very soon. The ruler's office were very quick to get this news out at a time that Dubai World, the struggling, seemingly state-backed company, is having to sell off assets.
Raising serious doubts, he contends, that this might be any major new addition to the world's oil supplies. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Oil continued its slide today in the face of economic unease. Crude is down 10% the past 2 days, about $71 a barrel at the close in New York. The major stock indices spent most of this Friday firmly underwater, if I could mix my liquids there. They found their footing in positive ground literally as the closing bell was ringing. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. President Obama braved that looming blizzard on the East Coast today for a trip all the way out to Maryland. He's making the rounds trying to build support for his jobs program. And he said what you'd expect he'd say about this morning's update on the labor market, that the U.S. is climbing out of a huge hole, which was, of course, followed by a big but, that we are seeing a mix of both good and bad economic indicators right now. Throw that in with some of the things that have been happening overseas, and there are just a whole lot of questions, questions that will be answered in our weekly wrap of Wall Street and Beyond. John Carney's here from ClusterStock.com, also Lee Gallagher from Fortune Magazine. Good to talk to you both again.
Good to be here, Kai.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Lee, quickly on the jobs to get us going today, what's your gut telling you about that report this morning?
This is what we expected. This is going to be a long, hard recovery, and it maybe hasn't started yet. I mean, and the jobs is the worst of everything, and I think we know that, but I think we're just going to, every month, we're going to continue to get proof that that's the case. You know, people continue to see their friends, their spouses, their neighbors losing their jobs and taking months and months and months to find something, not weeks and weeks and weeks.
John, I want to run a phrase by you here, my friend. Jobless recovery, right? We've got gross domestic product going. Things are settling anyway in the housing market, and yet jobs are kind of eh.
That's absolutely right. It's a jobless recovery for everybody who doesn't work for an investment bank. I was in a taxi cab just on my way to the studio today, and the cab driver said, "How are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm doing pretty well." And he said, "Do you have a job?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And he said, "Then you should be doing great."
Wow.
When people think just having a job is, you know, that's all you need for happiness, that shows that things are pretty shaky out there in the economy.
But if we're seeing growth in the economy, John, and your taxi guy notwithstanding, aren't jobs eventually somehow going to have to follow?
There's an argument that they cut back too many jobs because businesses really were in a panic last year and that they'll have to start hiring again. But I don't see any evidence of that actually happening. I'd love to believe that jobs are going to start coming back, but too many people are trained to do things like build houses and work in parts of the economy that no longer work right. So I'm not sure that jobs are really going to come roaring back anytime soon.
Wow. Interesting. Speaking of shaky, let's shift gears a little bit here and go overseas. And European debt. We talked about it a little bit up at the top of the broadcast. Portugal, Greece, Spain, those guys are in some trouble. It's affecting all kinds of markets, stocks and currencies. But what about things outside of that, John? I mean, what's the real impact here?
Well, what everybody's worried about is not just, you know, whether Portugal's going to melt down and its banks are going to melt down, but who is invested in Portugal, which financial institutions in England and in the U.S. and in Germany own a lot of this Portuguese debt, because that's the ripple-on effect that we get, right? The dominoes start falling. You get Greece in trouble, and suddenly Bulgaria gets in trouble, and then the Eastern Europe gets in trouble, and then Australian banks start running into trouble.
Lee, I was reading a blog post this morning someplace saying that this is the worst possible time for this to have happened. Just as we have this nascent recovery, there's more stuff that's going sour.
It's true. And, you know, it really is about contagion. And it's all eerily reminiscent of the subprime disaster, which...
Well, now I feel much better. Thank you.
But no, it is a really, really sensitive time right now. And don't forget, we're hovering right around that 10,000 mark with the Dow, which has always historically been such a huge psychological hurdle and many times difficult to really surpass. So I think the fear with what's going on in Europe is that it could disrupt global markets if it gets much more widespread. And if we're talking about the European Monetary Union unraveling, I mean, that could really affect global markets in a big way.
All right. One more thing to talk about. Also on the topic of debt, not the European kind, our kind. The president's budget came out this week, $3.8 trillion. And here's the debt question for you, Lee. Is that really a big deal, or is it the price of doing business, in essence, in a really bad economy?
It's a massive number. But I do think that we've done all the right things. You throw money at a crisis like this. It's hard to remember just how bad things were, but you run deficits at a time like this.
John, debt, what do you think?
If we had saved money and not spent as recklessly as we did during the boom years, taking on debt in a recession would make sense. Unfortunately, we just kept racking up debt from 2000 all the way up till the great crash happened. And so this debt matters because it's just being piled on top of all the debt we already accumulated.
John Carney from ClusterStock.com. Lee Gallagher, a brand new assistant managing editor, I am told, at Fortune Magazine. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Guy.
Thanks.
Whatever the goods and bads of today's unemployment report were, I can pretty much guarantee you that at least one part of the economy is going to be adding jobs over the next couple of months. There's a huge push on right now to hire more than 1 million people to work for Uncle Sam. They're going to be helping to count the rest of us. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler caught up with the Census Bureau's unemployment office here in Los Angeles.
Speaking to a Hispanic community group, the census recruiter makes his pitch in Spanish and English.
We are accepting applicants. We really need people.
Considering the high unemployment rate, you might expect that people would line up for census jobs, but not in downtown Los Angeles.
We need 120 people. It's estimated 125. Well, we have less than 10.
Part of the challenge is that the census tries to hire from within the communities it's counting. People are generally more comfortable opening the door and answering questions from a neighbor. But it can be a challenge to find local recruits from the inner city, especially in immigrant communities already suspicious of the government. On top of that, the census needs people with various foreign language skills. It's no small effort, says Michael Carpenter, census office manager in downtown Los Angeles.
This is the largest peacetime operation in the history of the United States.
Between now and the end of April, his office will hire 1,000 people. On May 1st, census workers will start going door to door, chasing down the people who don't send back their census forms.
We're looking for people daytime, evenings, and weekends, especially evenings and weekends. Flexibility is important.
To be eligible, you need to be over 18, submit to a background check, and pass a multiple choice test.
I caught up with some applicants who just took the test at a library in Hollywood. 41-year-old Derek Livingston works part-time at a theater. He took the job out of a sense of civic commitment.
I really believe in it. Otherwise, I'd go work in a bank somewhere, or try to work in a bank somewhere.
Jasmine Mascoro is 18. She likes the money.
I'm a student, struggling, and it's hard in these economic times, so $17 an hour sounds really good right now.
Some applicants already have jobs, like Nick Blyke.
I'm a taxi driver. I have to hustle at my job, so this seems more chilled out, more relaxed.
At another testing site, a job center in downtown Los Angeles, applicants were more desperate. A few had been unemployed for more than a year. Preston White was laid off about 6 months ago.
It's been treacherous out here. You have to just take what you can get right now. I have to pay rent. I have to eat. So I don't have time to be picky right now.
He's looking for a job to get him through the next couple months. That's about the most he can expect. Census office manager Michael Carpenter says all the positions are temporary.
They can last anywhere from a few days to a few months.
By the end of September, Carpenter and his staff will all have to find new jobs. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Coming up, bosses go undercover to make their businesses better.
The show only works because we see some of the failings of the company, but then the company, the boss, gets a chance to fix those things.
But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials put on 10 points today, but just by the hair of its chinny chin chin. The blue chips were off as much as 168 at one point. They gained a tenth percent, 10,012 at the bell. The NASDAQ rose 15 points, 0.75%, closed at 2141. The S&P 500 edged up 3 points, 0.25%, finished at 1,066. 1066. I was a history major. For the week, the Dow unloaded 0.6%. The NASDAQ powered down 0.3%. The S&P 500 fell 0.7% today. Tech stocks were led by Cisco Systems and Intel, both charged up 2.33%. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 3.57%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. If you missed the broadcast, you can still catch Marketplace. Go to our website and click on podcasts. You'll find Marketplace, The Morning Report, Marketplace Money, and more, all at marketplace.org.
Here's a look at the Marketplace Datebook for events coming up Monday. What do consumers know about the new Credit Card Accountability, Responsibility, and Disclosure Act? Find out Monday. The Consumer Federation of America and the Credit Union National release a survey and offer tips for prudent plastic use. The Boy Scouts of America celebrates its 100th anniversary. And American film icon James Dean was born on February 8, 1931. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. Yes, there is a football game the citizens of New Orleans are going to be paying attention to on Sunday. But in the shadows of the Super Bowl, there is a small matter of city governance to attend to. New Orleans is about to get its first new mayor since 2002. Saturday is Election Day. And in a city where the economy is still trying to get back to life pre-Katrina, you'd figure that'd be a pretty big deal. It would. Any other time. David Hammer is on the line with us now. He covers City Hall for the Times-Picayune down there. David, it's good to have you with us.
Great to be here, Kai.
So, listen, you are a diehard Saints fan. You are also a City Hall reporter, which means you're a diehard politics fan. What are you going to be doing on Election Day?
Well, strange story. I'm actually going to be going to Miami to try to get a ticket to the game without one in hand. It's a last-minute change of plans. I have an opportunity, and paper was nice enough to let me give it a shot.
So you're a politics guy, and yet you're not going to vote.
unfortunately, it worked out strangely, and no, I'm not.
Talk to me about the effect of this game on the city of New Orleans. I mean, it is still trying to come back from Hurricane Katrina, and yet the mayoral election, which will affect the future of the city a good deal more, you'd think, is kind of getting buried.
Yeah, it is, and it's unbelievable the impact that the Saints have had on the city. I mean, from an economic standpoint, there's just unbelievable amount of money in the local market being poured into Saints merchandise. The attention of every New Orleanian and everybody in the area on TV is to Saints coverage. Unbelievable stat that I heard was that the NFL said that the highest rating, local rating it got for the Pro Bowl was in New Orleans, and there were no Saints playing in the game. And people are just so tuned into the NFL right now. And what the best thing that the mayoral candidates can hope is that people's high attention on local media coverage of the Saints will kind of trickle into, their radio and television ads and hopefully get them some exposure here.
Yeah. What's the better bet, though, David? Saints over the Colts or some kind of decisive victory in Louisiana, New Orleans politics?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Saints over Colts. But I think that there's a very good chance that there could be no need for a runoff here. It's going to be very, very tight, all the polls indicate. But Mitch Landrieu, the lieutenant governor, is within clear striking distance of finishing this.
Obviously, the Houdat Nation down there likes the Saints, but is there a glimmer of reality that Peyton Manning is going to be tough to beat?
Yeah, I mean, he's a local boy, and we know him well, and a lot of people like him. But I think there's a feeling that the national media has it wrong. They're focusing way too much on the Colts, and we know the real deal down here. We know the Saints are going to pull it out.
Well, keep your fingers crossed, and I hope you get a ticket. You're going down there with that one, yeah?
I am absolutely doing it, and I'm on a very tight budget is the other problem. But I'm gonna do what needs to be done. Let's put it that way.
David Hammer covers City Hall for the New Orleans Times-Picayune. David, have yourself a good trip.
Who dat?
See you, man. Bye-bye.
All right, thanks.
How many times have you said to yourself, perhaps after an especially stern talking to from your boss, man, if they could only get a taste of what I have to do every single day out there? Well, never fear, CBS hears you. A new reality show premieres Sunday night right after the Super Bowl. Undercover Boss will have executives out with frontline workers, bosses from companies like 7-Eleven and Churchill Downs, doing entry-level jobs trying to find out what's really going on. And did I mention they're going to be incognito, too? Our New York Bureau Chief Amy Scott reports.
I'll admit there's something gratifying about seeing the president of a Fortune 500 company cleaning porta potties.
Okay, so what is there a technique I use, or I just stick this baby in there?
Push it in there.
Like that. Okay. Mix it up nice.
Yeah, mix it up.
That's Larry O'Donnell, president and chief operating officer of Waste Management. Only on this day, he's pretending to be a guy named Randy Lawrence, who's filming a show about trying out entry-level jobs.
Man, you do a good job. I like you.
The real show is Undercover Boss. It follows executives from White Castle, 7-Eleven, and Hooters as they work alongside the rank and file in their own companies. The show's executive producer, Stephen Lambert, says what they find isn't all flattering.
The show only works because we see some of the failings of the company. But then the company, the boss, gets a chance to fix those things.
In the first episode, Waste Management's Larry O'Donnell hears from one garbage truck driver who says her schedule is so packed she has to pee in a coffee can.
You obviously can't keep breaking off route all the time to go use the restroom. That would add all kinds of time onto the route every time.
When Janice, the driver, vents about being spied on by her supervisors, O'Donnell realizes it's his fault.
I've probably been the one at corporate that's driving productivity, and I feel terrible that I've created something that is causing her to not enjoy her job.
After spending time with Janice, the boss makes some changes. He gives drivers more flexibility to take time for bathroom breaks. And he says he's working with supervisors so that drivers see them as coaches, not spies. O'Donnell says he learned so much from the experience, he'd recommend other bosses try it, even without the cameras.
Absolutely. Anything that any of us can do to just better understand and open the channels of communication with all levels of the company, it can only be a positive thing.
But going undercover is a risky management strategy.
I think the biggest risk is the loss of trust.
Matt Pace is with the HR consultancy DDI. One of the companies involved in the show is a client of the firm. Pace says as long as something positive comes of it, employees will probably forgive the deception.
But to the extent that it's an inspection with a clipboard and at worst an inquisition, I think then you run the risk of just adding insult to injury.
In the show, the workers seem pretty forgiving when they realize they've been duped. Many of them walk away with promotions or better working conditions. Waste Management's Larry O'Donnell says the experience has changed the way he manages.
When we do have something that we're thinking about doing now that is going to have an impact on our front line, if we're forming a team, we'll include somebody from the front line to be on that team.
But if the show has changed the way bosses like O'Donnell see their workers, executive producer Stephen Lambert says it may also change the image many workers have of bosses.
The financial crisis and the recession has been tough for so many people, and I think there's been quite a lot of disillusionment about bosses in America. So I think there's an appetite and an interest to see how it could be otherwise, to see bosses trying to understand what's going on in the front line and trying to find those unsung heroes that deserve recognition.
After this first crop of undercover executives, Lambert has ideas for a second season. So how about it, boss? I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, helping to solve tomorrow's retirement savings challenge. This is Putnam Today. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today about a classic American board game and how it reflects the state of the U.S. economy today. Hasbro has released the design for an updated version of Monopoly to mark the game's 75th anniversary this fall. Things are a little bit different than most of us remember. First of all, there is no paper money, no player acting as banker. It's all debit cards now, apparently, and ATM machines. Also, forget pass and go and collecting 200 measly dollars as in the original. It is 2 million now. Inflation, I suppose. But here's the best part. The board is round. All the properties are laid out on this disc-like thing that's kind of shaped like a bubble. A real estate bubble, if you will. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media this Friday afternoon. Today, the Dow put on 10 points, a tenth of 1%, closed at 10,012. The Nasdaq rose 15 points, 0.75%, 21.41. The S&P 500 edged up 3 points, 0.25%, finished at 10.66. Battle of Hastings, William the Conqueror, anybody? Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste West, and the executive producer is J.J. Yor. Yes, I'm a history geek. Coming up this weekend on our personal finance show, Marketplace Money, how to play the car companies against each other.
Basically, it means if you have a Toyota, you want to shop for a Ford, show them the registration on your current Toyota, and they'll give you $1,000 off.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. We are back here Monday afternoon. Have yourself a great weekend.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.